Well, on the heels of Art, I didn't think it'd get any better. And then just our luck, we got the newly crowned Utah State Cyclocross Champion, not Alex Grant. We got Ryker Brand, the new Alex Grant. How do you like that?
I'm flattered.
Those no are pressure.
Some, those are some big, those
no
are
pressure.
Some big shoes.
Those are some ridiculously enormous shoes. But I'm really excited to have Ryker here. We've got, we were just discussing before this, we have a kind of, not a deep dive for you today, but we've got some fun kind of holiday theme stuff we're going to run through.
Rapid fire shallow dive.
We got a lot of questions, a few news things to go over. So it's going to be a kind of a salad of an episode, I think.
It's going to be a little different, a little light, but don't worry. The episode I'm working on for next week is...
Are we going to get a really heavy, meaty one?
It's going to be heavy and meaty next
week. Well, take your melatonin next week, guys. It's going to be awesome. But to start, Ryker, for those of you who don't know you, which is probably a tiny number of people, why don't you introduce yourself to a whole bunch of familiar people who for sure know you, but that's what we do anyway. What I've asked everybody is like, how do you explain who you are when you meet someone for the first time?
I usually just say that I'm a recreational cyclist, someone who likes to ride their bike a lot and trying to be a good person every single day. You know,
I'm going to immediately bite on this because if anybody has the band, like the, I don't know, if anybody could justify saying that they're not a recreational cyclist on this team, I think you're pretty high up on that list.
Thank you.
Why specifically recreational? Because you've done a lot of pro racing this year specifically.
Right. I feel like a big qualifier there is to say that you're getting paid like a regular paycheck. And I think that my life is anything from consistent right now. I am studying at the U, taking mechanical engineering, and my life is in shambles, if I'm completely honest.
Most pro cyclists are, though. That might make you more like a pro cyclist.
Right? I mean, it's still a good lifestyle, but it's very hectic, and I'm all over the place all the time. You could ask my girlfriend, and she knows better than anyone else.
So how did you, you were one of my green boys, but how before that, like for people who don't know you, how did you get into cycling? What was your introduction?
Right. Yeah. Well, Maybird, I started the Maybird just 2 years ago, actually. Yeah. At the end of 20 or beginning of 22, I think so.
Yeah.
Or no, it was 23. Yeah. It was 23. And then this is 24. So yeah, beginning of 2023, I started the Maybird, and then that was the start of my senior season. In my freshman year, I started with a friend on the Alta team who just invited me to go mountain bike riding on my Trek Marlin 4. And
that's a good bike.
It's an experience. Yeah. But, I mean, it's better than a Walmart bike for sure. It's safe enough that you could put it on a trail, but it still had rim brakes.
Oh, which, nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it was still pretty sketchy, but quickly developed up. My dad told me that I could take if I rode every single day, or like twice a week for a whole month, that I could get a brand new Trek Fuel EX 9.7. And that had like NX shifting, and it just seemed like a dream bike for me at the time. You
That's
know?
A sweet bike.
Yeah, it's pretty
I have
incredible.
To recalibrate really quick. If you've lived in the bike world for a long time, spending over $1,000 on any kind of bike is an insane, ludicrous thing to do.
And this like, bike that's was almost $3,000.
That's a sweet bike.
Right.
Yeah. And then from there, just like rapid progression, get into the racing.
No,
like...
completely opposite of that, really? Actually. For a while, I was an enduro kid, and I was wearing baggies for about 2 years. I raced freshman B, got completely walked on by my friends. I had no idea how to get faster. And then kind of a similar theme. And then in my junior year, I just started riding a lot more because I had the opportunity to race a hardtail for the first time. And coming from what I had that year, which was a Stump Jumper Evo with like 160 millimeters of travel, weighed 29 pounds. It was carbon. It was lightweight.
Yeah.
Kinda. But, you know, it was a high quality bike. We spent $6,000 on it. And then I ended up not racing that. I raced a Trek, like the Softail, the Pro Caliber, I think.
Mm-hmm. Super and Caliber. Or Softail. Softail. Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah. There we go.
With the ISO speed.
I forgot. I don't speak Trek very well. That's no, one I've right. never lived in.
Yeah, I raced that bike, and that was like a night and day difference for me. And from there, I was forever changed. And I said, hey, I want to get really good at this thing. And that's where I found Maybird, at the recommendation of one of my friends, Griffin Tasker, from a few years ago. Mm-hmm. And Yeah, no, just on a ever upward spiral, I hope.
So I was going to say, you were one of my green boys for, two seasons.
It was just one season.
Was it just the one?
Yeah.
Okay, it felt like more. For that one season, and you had a pretty remarkable progression after that. Like, you got a lot, because, I mean, being on the green teams, you're one of the faster guys on the team. All of the sudden, really, like, you started working with Kyson, it seems like, around that time. Just throw a bone to Kyson there really quick. Like, you are probably one of the, probably the biggest success story he's had so far, right?
Yeah, I just want to say that man is a legend.
Well, Calvin had a pretty awesome season.
Oh, Calvin too. Yeah,
Calvin, I was going to say you, Reese, and Calvin. All the kids that are working with him are doing really, really well, and it just is a testament to his ability, success, right? Like, he knows what he's doing, and he's making better cyclists. So using the Maybird ethos, I think.
Well,
for
there
sure.
you go. I'll take credit for that. That sounds good. I'm glad to have you here. We've got a whole bunch of stuff we want to go over, and I want to do a little bit more deep diving into your background in a sec, but we do have a couple of announcements to run over really quick. Dan, first off, I'll say thank you for all those who reposted the team meeting announcement. That is January 8th.
January 8th at 6:30 p.m.
I couldn't remember. 6 or 8. January 8th, 6:30 p.m. at the Downtown Salt Lake Library. Please bring friends, bring anybody who might be interested in the team. We'll do a presentation there. For those of you who can't make it in person, we'll do our best to make it available another way, maybe at least a recording, but really
we'll
try to
record it and if
podcast
that doesn't
style.
Work.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, but come, please come bring friends. You know, I mean, as always, like Maybird, we're really interested in anybody over what? 12? What do we say? Yeah, like starting Junior Devo?
Yeah, if they're going to be starting Junior Devo, that's kind of when we start accepting them.
No upper age cap? Like if you've got a buddy college age who wants to write, like we need to do way more of that than we do.
You know, and if you know what you're doing and you're an experienced cyclist that's raced and you've got good skills and you're an awesome person, we'd also love to have you fill out a coach's application too.
Yes.
We need...
big salaries on offer this year. You get a company car. It's great. It's really good stuff. So
really going places with that budget, aren't we now?
Oh yeah, you know it. Yeah. Oh, we're trying to, I mean, we have a wealth manager. The new one this year is going to help us, but
the Norton group, right?
Yeah. Okay. There you go. Announcements beyond that.
Just, I guess there's going to be the Zwift.
Team Zwift, as always,
Wednesday.
6 p.m. Look for that link. Super easy to join up.
So fun. We need more people to do it. So
yes. Yeah.
Do it.
We had an excellent hike on Saturday. Granger Peak had a really great crew of guys. I assume we'll do another
one
of those.
We're going to do more of those, but we need more girls to come to those. I felt really bad. One of our girls showed up, realized there weren't any other girls there, and I can't blame her. She didn't want to stay.
Yeah.
So we need more girls at the hikes.
Yeah. The more people who can come to those, the better. Definitely never too many there. And then running group, we're recording this right after this.
Running group today was just awesome.
Big group again?
Really big group. And so here's what Amy had us do, just to give you an idea of what running group's like. Okay. So we met in this park. It was really beautiful, actually. It was kind of snowing and great atmosphere. A great group was there. And so the game was after a warm up, you would do a lap around the park. When you finished the lap around the park, you would get a piece of chalk and you would play tic-tac-toe with whoever else was there.
Oh boy.
Whoever won the tic-tac-toe game got a starburst. And at the end of the event, whoever had the most starbursts won a prize. And the prize was actually pretty awesome. She brought clam chowder.
In case you don't know, this is an extremely intimidating, very serious event. You know, like no nonsense.
High
at all.
Stakes.
High, exactly. Yeah. So if you haven't come,
live and die.
I would say don't come unless you've got a heart of stone. Like this is for real alpha males exclusively, right?
Joe, hop off the pedestal.
I know, right? Well, I've been to one, and
I will say, as
someone who really struggles with running, it is the best. It's like I hate running more than just about anybody, and running group makes it awesome.
Running
so
group's fun.
Definitely come to those Mondays at 4:30.
And we've been having great turnouts. So
yeah,
it's a lot of fun. All abilities, and the way they're designed is like, they're designed so you and the like the slowest person in the world and the fastest person in the world could come to running group.
Yeah.
And both have fun.
Dan and whoever the fastest person in the world can both come and they can both have fun. Beyond that, I'm trying to remember if there's anything I've missed. That's all I've got.
Yeah, we'll do another hike soon. I can't do one this weekend. It's my wife's birthday, so that would probably be...
Nerd. That means it's my mother's birthday. I should probably do something about that. But
kind of important.
With all that in mind, I do have... I do want to talk...
So we have some questions, Cam.
Well, that's what I was doing. Thanks for hopping in the middle of my segue. I do have a couple questions. I want to start with a question that I got, because if you text me, you get preferential treatment. I got a really interesting question. Well, I think interesting. Dan, you're not going to like this. This is a perfect time to have Riker here. So fellow nerd, here's our question from Josh Potter. What is the case for Aero socks? I saw a Dylan Johnson video on Aero Gains, and he said you could gain almost 5 watts, which seems enormous. What do I tell my parents to convince them to get me $50 socks for Christmas? I have a few thoughts here. Do you own Aero socks?
I do. Yes.
Okay.
Not the traditional Aero sock, but like the Silka, like threaded Aero sock instead of the plastic one.
Okay.
That you need 3M spray to hold up
on your ankle. Okay.
So I think the Aero socks are a wildly overpriced item, and you should take them as cheap as you can get them.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what brand, don't take a preference on it. Also, I think it's important to not buy on Alibaba or anything like that, because I've heard that those socks sometimes don't have the same performance benefit.
That wouldn't surprise me.
Almost null compared to like a actual Aero sock. But I do think that $50 is quite ridiculous. So don't be looking on Sockaloon for...
That sounds like a lot. And I want to contextualize that there are a lot of claims in the cycling industry about how many watts you can save by doing a thing. And especially when it comes to aerodynamics, I think you have to take context. First off, you have to remember that bike science is barely science. That it's like the crappiest version of science.
Total conjecture.
It's very close to total conjecture. So the other thing you have to remember is that when Specialized says that the new tarmac is X watts faster than the old one, they are testing under the parameters of a world tour rider. So for Dylan Johnson, who is world class talent,
isn't no bike it usually at all. Based on a 40k TT?
It's usually based. Sometimes a lot of companies won't publish their white papers either, so we don't know. But it's like it's usually a 40k TT with world tour level power with somebody who's in an aero position. You know, like,
well, if it's world tour level power, it would be harder to get a 5 watt increase than if it was like.
No, it would be easier. Yeah, because you'd be going faster, right? So if the bike gets more aerodynamic.
Yeah.
So the idea, though, is that no one is going that fast. It would be easier if you're a professional.
If a 5 watt training gain would be easier on an amateur than a professional, but I can see you're right where
an aerodynamic
gain would be better on a
professional. And so my thought is this: if you are a very serious roadie, crit racer, TT rider, I think there's a case for Aero socks. For an off-road cyclist, I can't imagine that you will be doing the kind of speed in an already aero optimized position where socks would be worth. Because like I think you could probably get a bigger aero benefit from dropping a spacer out from under your stem and just getting your body lower. But you also have to remember that even in the fastest Nike race, like, Aero's may be a factor, but I don't think it's a factor to the extent that like your $50 on Aero socks will be well spent. That said, they do look kind of cool.
I agree with that. I think it's really important to also consider that maybe dropping a spacer from your stem isn't the best idea for all people.
No. So we should say really quick. Okay, thank you for pointing
that
out.
Bad idea.
Thank you for checking me. But like, I think the point is like, if aero was really the point, there are probably free.
What you're saying is your position's probably more important. I would say that there are places that you would, situations you would get into where there would be a difference.
Mm-hmm.
But
for example, we had those races out in Manti this year, and it was extremely windy. I think for a JVA varsity rider, 100% having aero socks and an aero helmet, that is a game changing difference.
Unless the aero helmet causes excess heat.
Right.
You know,
right.
But I think there are cases where it could make a difference. Whether it's worth $50 or not depends on
how big's your bank account.
How big your bank account
is. If $50 is an insignificant amount of money for if you're having to ask your parents to buy them for you, my impulse is that $50, there's probably a more meaningful way you could spend that $50. But here's the other thing I'd say with all of this stuff, because I worked at Contender and I did a tour at Backcountry too, right? Like, if you really like it and it makes you stoked to go out and ride your bike and it makes you feel like a better bike rider, there are much worse things you could be spending money on. Now, as far as the rhetorical exercise of convincing your parents to let you do that, there's a few roads you get on there. You could say, hey, what are most kids my age doing with their time and money? Buy me Aero socks. You could also be like, hey, you know, if I do this, this is going to make me this perfect dream kid who's more interested in exercising than girls, drugs, and crashing cars, you know. I kind of found the holding your future hostage by saying that I could be doing so much worse is an effective way to get your parents to buy you stuff, but it probably depends on your relationship with them.
Yeah. I actually am really excited to do a whole Aero episode.
Yes.
But, you know, but
we're going to the wind tunnel, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's one of those that I want to do it right and spend a lot of time preparing for it. But that is a good question.
Yeah.
Is would Aero socks be more important than oversized pulleys?
Absolutely. I think so. I think if you're talking value for money, oversized pulleys is one of the worst upgrades that you can do on a bike, period.
They do look cool.
They look amazing, but that's not the point.
If the ceramic speeds are over 200. Oh, what is it? $300 now? It's
like 400.
Yeah. It's
full setup with a new cage.
I should know this. Quite a bit.
Yeah. It's very expensive, and the gains you're getting are on the margin of like 2-3 watts, right?
So basically, there's a possibility it could be an advantage. Whether it's worth the money or not depends on your circumstances.
If you find some for $20, do it. And at $50, I'm like, eh.
You know, on most mountain bike courses, probably not. On some of the Nike courses,
if you wanted
maybe.
To take it one step further, though,
short track,
Aero overshoes, maybe.
I mean, if you're going to do it, go all the way. Be like, I mean, there was Koretsky at that one short track with overshoes, Aero helmet. Like, they're wearing those basically a 3/4 cut skin suit, you know.
Whoever asked this question, I guarantee they're way more confused now.
We just muddied the waters. I don't know. But again, it's just there's not science on this. So I would say.
And I'll be all, it's up to you. If you think that $50 is a lot of money, then think about it. Maybe not.
I'd say I'm mostly no on this.
Mostly no.
What's the next question we got?
Well, I got one. So I love Grant Holzberg's questions. He asked me quite a few questions. And usually I just shoot him an answer. We kind of talk back and forth a little bit. But this one I thought would be kind of fun to talk about, especially because this episode isn't very physiology based. So I need to throw
you're lost. You don't know what to do with yourself.
I know. I'm going to be so useless most of this episode.
When are you going to come back, Dan? Next time?
Next week will be a meaty physiological topic.
It's going to be awesome next week. I'm excited. Well, this week will be good too. But
what does Grant want to know?
So Grant's question is, had another training question come up today. I've heard it mentioned that zone 2 running is much more time effective than on a trainer, and that an hour of zone 2 running would be equal to 2 hours of zone 2 on a trainer.
This has been a big question for me as well, actually. I think it's very important to think about, but also like a lot of the time in zone is lost on the bike, right? Especially unless you're on the trainer, then it's almost 100% effective.
I'm going to go ahead and bow out of this one.
Let me finish the question. Okay, hang on a sec. He says, okay, so that's the assumption that Grant's heard. He goes, is this true? I'd imagine that the zone 2 time is pretty universal. Would running be more time efficient in zone 2 because it's more of a compound movement than pedaling? So that's his question.
What does that even mean, Joe?
That question means he knows. He's asked. Yeah, he knows. He knows more than all of us. Probably.
So this is a really good question, and you do hear a lot. And I don't know if I've ever specifically heard the claim that zone 2 running is more efficient than zone 2 riding a bike.
Big if true.
Well, and my assumption, based on what little I know, is that it wouldn't be. Let me explain. So first of all, running, I've definitely heard that running's more efficient, but in terms of the calories you're burning or the kilojoules you're using, I would say running is generally more efficient than cycling. Just because there's like, well, let's face it, for most people it's harder.
Yeah.
And you know, there's like no coasting and there's not, you know.
Bicycles are incredibly efficient. They're a very efficient way to move mass across distance.
Yeah. You know, but as far as like, is an hour of zone 2 running worth 2 hours of zone two on the trainer. And I would say my opinion is that it would definitely not be.
Definitely not.
Definitely not be. Because you got to understand, first of all, what zone two is. Okay, zone two is not a power number on your power meter. And zone two is not a percentage of your maximum heart rate. You know, zone two is actually like a condition that your body gets to during exercise, where you're primarily using, your ratio of fat that you're utilizing is the highest, and you're using primarily your slower twitch muscles, and you know, it's usually indicated by a level of lactate that's in your blood, you know, and if you reach that condition running or cycling, I think it's essentially the same. You're probably going to, you know, having said that, you're probably going to reach it quicker and with less effort running than you would cycling. Because to be honest, like if you're trying to do like a hold a zone two ride, it takes some effort to actually not be in zone one a lot of the time.
I think it also, same could be said for getting above zone two on a run, though. At least for me especially, I'm not as good at pacing on a run as I am on the bike. Maybe that's because I have a lot more experience on the bike and compared to running, right? But I also think that it's really easy to go too hard, and your RPE in comparison can maybe be a little bit lower on a run. And so you end up in tempo, and you can put a lot of fatigue on that way,
well,
right?
Well, that's what I was going to say. For me, where I'm not a runner, it's hard for me to even run at zone two.
Exactly.
Like I could almost,
you can almost walk.
I could almost walk and be in zone two.
That's like a crisp walk.
Yeah.
Trotting, maybe.
Yeah. And but I know that there are runners that are fit enough that they can totally run at zone two, you know, but I'm not one of them. Like if I'm running, I'm probably in zone three or near my threshold, you know? So I do think that in terms of like burning a lot of calories or doing a lot of KJs, running's very efficient. But I think zone two is zone two. But Grant did mention something interesting, though. He did say, would running be more time efficient because of it's more of a compound movement than pedaling? And I would think if that's the case, then maybe.
What does that mean, Dan?
So that would mean, an example I give is like when people are hiking or doing outdoor winter sports, I really like them to use poles. And the reason is because then if you're using poles, more of the muscles in your body are operating at zone two rather than just your legs.
So that turns into more calories, right?
Yeah, I would say in that case, then yes, it could be more efficient. Which is why I think cross-country skiing and Nordic skiing and ski-mo are such good sports because then you've got a larger percentage of your body doing zone two, a larger percent of your body contributing to your VO2 max. I really think that if you're doing like off-season winter training, try and incorporate poles into that because then you are using more of your body at zone
plus
two.
Plus it makes it more fun if you need to use poles, right? Nothing's
I
fun
think so.
If
it saves your knees too. But yeah, so and I don't know, I'm not an expert in running. I don't know if you're actually using more, like how much you're moving your arms or the rest of your body. Maybe you're doing more of that than you are on cycling. And so, you know, in that sense, it could be more efficient. But I think in general, zone two is a condition that your body gets into when you're
zone exercising. Zone two is zone two.
Yeah.
Put it that way.
So if at very least the 2-to-1 claim for sure.
I would say no.
Again, maybe under certain circumstances, you could make an argument that running slight, because running, like you said, is more practical for a lot of people at certain times of the year.
Not needing to dress up
in some ways. Yeah, but
and kind of like where we say the trainer is more efficient than riding outside because you're eliminating coasting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think in that way, running can be more efficient because you're not coasting. But I would, and maybe comparing it to running versus riding outside, maybe, but I think comparing it to the trainer, I don't think an hour of running zone two is the same thing is 2 hours of on the trainer. If you're truly doing,
we're going to be boring and lame and say no to both questions today. We're heavily leaning no on this one.
I will say something that's really important is staying in zone for workouts. That's huge because that completely changed the quality of your workout is quite literally determined by your time in zone, right?
Well, absolutely. Cause like, that's the thing with zone two is like, yeah, zone
a 2 hour workout staying in zone for 90
minutes. There's really
minutes
no
is not
shortcuts when it comes
workout.
To zone two, because once you push your body to a point where it's no longer using primarily slow twitch muscles and it's, and you're increasing the ratio of fat or you're increasing the ratio of carbs that you're utilizing and so forth, you're really not in zone two anymore.
You're going to the tempo.
You know? Yeah. And so like, really there's no shortcuts there. The only way to really improve it is to spend more time there. So,
which is bad news. That'd be amazing if there was some way to shortcut this.
Yeah,
but
you know, if you increase your zone two, you're really just doing zone two plus some glycolytic stuff. You know,
it's one of the cruel realities of life that the time of season where you need to be doing a lot is when you have to be.
Let
able
me
to
just throw out this. This is something that's kind of because I do a lot of what I learn. I like to learn from the running world because it's it's a sister sport. They do things very similar. But a lot of runners are actually using cycling to get more zone two time without, you know, the harsh impact of running on their bodies, you know. So, you know, you can do like a 6 hour zone two ride and it's not going to be
a 6 hour run of any
I dare you
service.
To go on a 6 hour run.
A 6 hour run would like
you destroy you yeah. for a week, right? Oh, depends on who you are.
So
a
that's
week, a year. Yeah.
You know, so a lot of runners are getting a lot of their volume in on the bike and their specificity running. So
we're saying probably no, mostly no for this one.
I would say definitely no.
Definitely no. Okay.
But running's good. No.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Were there any other questions we wanted to tackle on that?
I think that's all I had. That was fun.
No, this is fun. And again, like send questions. We love questions. I think we should probably save. I get a lot of questions because Josh actually asked a really interesting question too about his bike. And I actually, you know what? If we have a sec, I do want to run over this because I loved his question he asked. And I know you'll like this one too, Riker. He asked me a while ago. Josh Potter, same guy who asked our AeroSox question.
Josh actually asks me a lot. I love it when Josh sends me questions. I notice he knows where to route the questions.
Yeah, he actually does. He's asking me the right ones. Asked one about suspension servicing. We talked about suspension a little bit, but he said, can you underfork a bike by 10 mils? I was looking at some forks and the ones I'm looking at are only 110 when I have a 120 on my Epic Evo. Can I solve any potential problems with a flip chip? And my answer to him
That's
was
a good question.
In most cases, you can go like 10 mils in either direction is fine. And a lot of pros do this depending
on
the ride.
You could do 20 as well, right?
Oh yeah, you could do. In a lot of cases,
I have my bike overforked at 20 right now.
Yeah, so you've because you have the
it's the S-Works Epic with a Fox 34 120 mil.
Yeah,
and he's talking about underforking.
So he's talking about underforking, but he's underforking from an Epic Evo. So you have to remember the Epic Evo is
120, right?
It's 115 rear, 120 front, right? I ran my Epic Evo at 100, which is 20 mils lower, and it was fine. Like, the bottom bracket's pretty low there. If you're doing a lot of technical climbing, like, if you lived in St. George and Zen is your go-to ride, you might be getting an unusual number of pedal strikes. But for most bikes, you can go for sure within 10, and really within 20, you're not going to have, like, a safety issue. You do have to remember that you can't change anything about a bike's geometry in isolation, that nothing happens in a vacuum. So when you take, like, let's say we take an Epic Evo and someone's like, oh, I'm done with Nika, I want a bike with more travel, I'm gonna go buy a 140 mil fork, we're gonna go 20 mils over, right? At that point, your head tube angle does become slacker, right? But the bottom bracket also gets lifted up, right? The seat tube angle becomes slacker effectively. So you're going to change other things about your bike that might not be intended. And this is, if you work at a bike shop, you will have a guy who comes in trying to do this. And you'll have to explain that if you add an extra 50 mils to the front of your bike, it's going to jack up the rest of the geometry. And then it's not going to feel more sandy. It's going to feel goofy and weird and terrible. Yeah. Conversely, if you underfork, like if we took, and this isn't so much of an issue in the cross country road because 100 is as low travel as most forks go these days. You don't see a whole lot of, I mean, Fox has, you know, 60 mil gravel forks or whatever.
The 30s,
but
yeah.
Hypothetically, like if we were to do that, your head tube angle is going to become steeper, which most people aren't after anyway, but then it's just your bottom bracket's going to fall way down and you're going to be having pedal strikes all over the place. So on an Epic Evo, that is effectively the same frame as the Epic. So it's one of the frames where the geometry is designed in such a way that you can run it at 100 or 120. It's going to have different ride characteristics and it's going to work either way. If someone came to me and they're like, I have the Scott Spark that's 120 front and 120 rear and the fork broke and I can only afford a 100 mil fork, can I put a 100 mil fork in the front, 120 out back? There's some situations where I'd be like, that'd be a little bit goofy, but if you have to, whatever. The short answer is generally not a safety issue. Once you're getting outside of this kind of 10 to 20 range on reforking, you're probably going to mess up the bike in a way that isn't worth it for whatever other benefit you're getting, is my short answer to that.
Right. And still on the topic of the fork.
Answer. That was a short Joe answer.
Still on the topic of the fork, I think it's important to also note that if you're going from a 34 down to a 32, possibly when you're under forking that, that might be something to consider as well, because that's going to change your ride characteristic a lot.
Yeah, I was going to say, if anytime your stanchions are, and granted, most every fork is, I mean, most people are running a 34, 35 mil stanchion fork. Going down to the 32, like a Fox 32, Fox will say otherwise. Unless you're a really light rider, you will notice a stiffness difference in the front when you're sprinting, when you're descending. It is like the fork on that on my Fuji. I love that bike, but I do tell when I ride that the front end is more noodly. Right. You know, like,
and what does the flip chip play in this equation here?
So flip chip, I just totally ignored half his question. So a flip chip, just look at me giving a short answer for 20 minutes. A flip chip is, and they go in different places in different bikes. It's basically a little piece that you can take out.
In a linkage, right?
It's almost like a spacer that you can take out. And the original idea with like the original flip chip was you could flip it around and it would basically, you could have like a high or a low setting on the bike where in the low setting, you'd take it out. It would allow the suspension to move slightly. And that would put your head tube angle at a slacker point. It would steepen up your seat tube angle. It would drop your bottom bracket. Or conversely, if you... You know, I'm trying to remember what the first bike that had a flip chip was.
So it was like party mode?
Yeah, and the funny thing is bike companies quickly realized that everybody put it in the lowest setting all the time.
So they defaulted it.
And so, well, and then bikes just kept getting slacker and slacker, and it's like the marketing thing now is like, it's like evil, and everybody else that does it is like low and lower, right? Because it's already super low. Most people end up riding their bikes as slack as they go, is the reality. Very few people, like, and the funny thing is a lot of pros will actually play with it and go high or low, because if you're doing like really... Like if you were riding like old style Park City trails that are super tight with a lot of like,
you want it in the high setting.
You'd want it maybe a little bit higher to make your cornering easier.
But then if you're gonna go hit Moose House, those right steep enduro trails, you might want to put it back.
And it really is. It's a really cool bit of tech because it's almost something you can do trail side, and you can pretty significantly change the ride characteristics of your bike. Most people who have flip chips and on the Rocky Mountain Element, they have like four different modes you can have, right? Most people end up riding their bikes in the slackest setting most of the time. I'm not saying that that's right, but that's where most people kind of default to. So, yes, you could totally counteract some of these changes with a flip chip. I can tell you, I ran my Epic in the low setting with a 100 mil fork, and I actually really liked the ride characteristics.
So he put a flip chip in the back so he's not over-forked?
Put it in there. It's already there.
The
right?
Flip chip is in the suspension linkage.
It comes with the bike. Oh. Yeah.
So it's...
And essentially, you would keep it low if you're going to under-fork it so that it stays neutral. Or right.
So my bike has one of these, and I never knew it.
No, I don't think Scalpel does. Scalpels don't have them.
I'm not sure.
It's something that started in the trail world and has worked its way into the cross-country world. So the Epic Evo has it. I don't know if does the new Epic have it?
Which one?
The Evo does
the
for
eight
sure.
The 8 or the World Cup? The World Cup.
The World Cup
definitely does not.
The World Cup. Oh, the World Cup doesn't, but the Epic 8.
It might. I don't know.
Might. I know that the Evo, they do send it with one. I should know this. Hey, there you go. But short answer is you can play fast and loose, play around with a little bit. Once you get out of that kind of 20 mil range, it's usually a no. So,
Josh is with in range, so he's probably okay.
You're fine. You can 100, 120 is totally fine either way. Yeah.
So yeah. So do that and probably get your socks too.
Yeah. Lots of confusing answers. Did that clear it up? I like nuance. I'm big on gray areas. With that in mind, is there anything else? Because I have lots of stuff. Okay, it does. There you go. For all you specialist people, the new Epic 8 does also have a flip chip. Is there anything else you want to go over? Because I have a lot of stuff I want to ask Riker before we get to our shallowish dive.
Let's start talking to Riker, and then we'll do our shallow dive at the end.
Yeah. So I've got a couple minutes, and I do want to ask you here. I think a lot of kids that we work with kind of are setting out looking for seasons like the one that you had. I think a lot of people leave the sport because they never have a season like the one you had. Because you had from the outside, it seems like a like an almost perfect season. Like you batted pretty high on most of the things. I mean, like within reason, I don't think you could have hoped for a whole lot better, right? Like winning states, great performance at point to point. A lot of things went really well for you this year, right?
Yeah, and honestly, I'd like to delve into those like shortcomings because they are there. But the reality is people aren't seeing that. And that's the hard thing about cycling and sport in general is that, you know, you go through the highs and lows and people only see the highs, right?
Because I remember that it seems like the season before was kind of the opposite, right?
I don't know if I would put it there. It was a step in the right direction, but it definitely wasn't as bright as this one was.
Yeah, as far as like a lot of your race reasons. Yeah, a lot of bad luck at races the season before.
By comparison, yeah, maybe. Maybe just also I wasn't as good of a I'm more of a put together racer now in all ways. Keeping my bike in one piece, right? That's a huge deal.
Oh, absolutely.
That's a skill.
At the early I Cups this year, I had a mechanical like pretty much every race.
Well, that was early this year, right?
Yeah, it was Cactus Hugger, it was Red Rock.
Oh, that's right. I totally forgot about it. The season's long.
Cedar City. Right.
I was sitting here thinking like you had a pretty but I'm like, "Oh yeah, I was there when we were like, dude, that sucks." You were like,
"I will say I was broken down in tears after my race in Cedar City at the mountain bike state championship that they call it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The I Cup state championship, I was broken down in tears because I seriously just couldn't figure out why every single time that I got on a bike to race, the bike came falling apart underneath me, right? Yeah. And a lot of that came down to the way I was riding it, but also adding things like a chain guide, because at that race, my chain got wrapped completely up in my bottom bracket and went through a full lap, and I couldn't pull it out between the linkage and the bottom bracket.
That's a bad day.
It's terrible. Yeah. So what I had to do is I had to wait for someone to come around after getting lapped a full time by my field. And there was a varsity racer who came through. He was walking his bike. He had a chain remover tool. And essentially what I did is I just pulled the chain, like the link out, and then I tried to put it back in. And as soon as I got back on the bike, chain snapped just like that.
Yep.
Because you can't really fix a bike that way, unfortunately.
You might be able to get you home, but you can't race.
Right. But to that point, like, yeah, last year wasn't as good, but I also think that, you know,
I think I was mixing up last year with earlier this season.
Yeah.
Right. Right. I mean, last year I did have some clean results, but they definitely were like 30th in varsity at NICA. I think this year if I was racing, I could have been on the podium for sure. Like, I would have been in that range. I was racing with some of those guys this year and other races. And
couple of things, yeah. Too. Because it really is impressive, like your NICA results versus what you've been able to do outside of
this
NICA
year, yeah,
is amazing.
Yeah,
I think that like I was saying though, you're building on the backs of giants. Like, I seriously, like, I, you know, that fitness doesn't come from nowhere. You show up every single day putting in that work, and over time that builds into something great, right? You don't start at the top and just be good like that, and that it's not based off of skill. I always thought when I was younger in sports that it was completely skill based. And I'm super, super happy to have found something like cycling where it's almost entirely the opposite, where there's a lot of skill, but it's so much more hard work. And whoever works harder is going to be more successful at the end of the day.
Absolutely. And then you said something else I kind of want to go back to, too, about, like, you know, you were talking about how, like, the start of the season, you kind of had a lot of bad luck with your bike, but you got the chain guard. And I remember, like, overhearing Bart Gillespie say something to someone once, that you kind of create your own luck.
For sure. And that's, Keegan says that, everybody, like,
yeah,
that's a doctrine.
And so basically your luck kind of changed by
creating my own luck,
putting more effort into kind of getting your bike dialed in. And,
right. And also learning how to ride a bike safer
finesse,
for your bike.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, you know, there's that rock garden at Cactus Hugger, and it's square edge rocks for like 10 feet aimed right at your rear tire. You go through those and you're slamming your rim every single time, almost 100% chance you're going to get a puncture. And that's exactly what happened to me. I went out super, super hard chasing the wind at that race. I wasn't being easy enough on the bike, and I flatted. And I rode back to the pit, and then I think I maybe flatted again. But I flatted it like 2 I Cups in a row, broke that chain, and I just thought that I was doing something wrong, or something was wrong with me, right? But in reality, it's the way that you're treating your bike. And that's a big, big portion of how your race will end up.
And I think that's right there is just a gold nugget for like Nike kids that are listening to this, to Because, like,
be nice to your bike.
He'll
be nice to you.
You've got to ride with finesse. Like, riding with finesse rarely slows you down.
Mm-hmm.
But being able to prevent flat tires, broken rims, snap chains, all that kind of stuff will help you finish races.
Yeah. I think understanding how your bike works too, so that you, it's like, I think a lot of the things that we prescribe, as far as like maintenance goes, sorry, I just knocked over a big old thing of my stuff over there that I probably shouldn't have put there. But I think that, like, understanding how the machine works, so it's not just an arbitrary, like, oh, you should wash your bike all the time. Like, that's not a vanity thing. That's, like, a deeply, deeply practical...
It shocks me every single time I wash my bike how much of a difference it makes. Like, it seriously seems like a cosmetic thing, but every time you do it, your linkage works better, your brakes are quieter, all of the above.
Well, you ask a mechanic what car to buy, and they say one that's had its oil changed, right? And, like, you know, if you've worked at a bike shop, you'll know that a lot of people come in and hemorrhage money 3-4 times a year because they refuse to wash and clean their chain.
For sure.
And their drivetrain's wearing out every 500 miles. And
I'll tell you, you can extend the life of a drivetrain by treating it well by like 10x.
I've been on the same cassette for 2 years now.
I put 7,000 miles on my bike this year, my two bikes this year.
Holy smokes.
And I didn't have to, I replaced chains, but I didn't replace a chain ring or a cassette. And I think that's a big, big testament to just taking care of your bike. A big thing is also using wax when it's possible.
Yeah.
I feel like that's kind of a hard thing to get into. But once you're into the walled garden, it's a really, really easy and super nice thing to have. Currently, I'm using the Silka Drip Lube that they have on their website.
Yeah.
And they also have it at Contender, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that stuff is like liquid gold.
It's really good.
It's so good. You're using it
on a wax chain though, right?
It's a chain that never gets oil lube on it because they don't mix, essentially. But I don't frequently wax my chains because I don't feel like I'm at that level yet where putting it in a crock pot is like any better. Maybe it's like marginally better, you know, but like at that point you're spending money to wax it every single time. And it's a lot more time commitment. Whereas this is just lubing your chain, letting it dry overnight. And then as soon as you pick up the bike the next morning, it's just good. You didn't have to take the chain off. You didn't have to turn on the crock pot, any of that. You didn't have to deep clean it. I like to clean it with soap and water, of course, but you know, it's still a lot easier.
So one thing I admire about you from a tech perspective is I was getting ready to race at Cross States. And I ran into you, and you mentioned that you were like, I'm changing out my wheels, or I'm changing out my tires. I was like, really? Like, right before the race? And you're like, yeah, I think the 2.2s are going to be faster. Like, 2.2s, right? Because most of us are riding like 35.
This is about to get solidified into history, everyone.
So this is interesting that I was like, that is such, in some ways, seemed like such an unorthodox choice. But I think, and it's easy to say in retrospect now, because you won, that like that was a pretty clear-eyed tech choice to say, oh, based on my experience as a bike racer, having done a lot of these, and having done my pre-ride, this is going to be faster. Even though other people aren't doing it, I feel confident that this is the better choice for me today. Even though that 2.2 tire might roll slower on the smooth parts,
right?
You knew that on net. And would you agree? I mean, I'm assuming that you think it was a benefit in retrospect. Like, you were glad you reached for those.
100%. 100%.
Okay.
Yeah, I would not have done it any different, I don't think, for interesting. Sure. Maybe I could have run the pressures a little bit lower. It was extremely bumpy, though. You raced, and No, it was like getting your brains chattered.
I'm
out
still sore. Right. Like, it was. I think the lesson to be learned from that is like, understand how your bike, the physics of how your bike works.
And also play within the rules of like what you're allowed to do.
Yeah.
Because at Utah Cyclocross, it's not limited. They don't throw a caliper on your bike, right? They don't check whether your tire width is 33 millimeters. Mm-hmm. So it, within those rules, anyone could have run a 2.2 tire. And there was guys who were doing it in the A field and they were putting a ton of success on, like, they were winning races, right? And I was like, I want that today. I'm going to chase that because I know that on this course where it's super, super bumpy, if I run a low pressure wide tire, it's going to turn out to be way faster.
What pressure were you running?
I have a hard time with this because I kind of just put whatever feels right. But I think for this race, I did, and these are 2.2 mountain bike tires compared to like a 33
would be the standard.
I think I was running 38s for most of the season otherwise. But for my 38s, I have the inserts, the gravel inserts from Tannis, and those are a huge help. And you can run those suckers at like 20 PSI, like almost proper mountain bike pressures, and they will just roll and they don't fold or anything, which is amazing. And that's a big problem with cross tires is that they'll fold, and that's why people will glue them with tubulars, right? Lots of jargon here. Stay with us. Sorry. But, you know, I mean, I think I ran maybe 18 in the front. Like,
what do you run?
19.
What do you run on your cross country bike?
On my mountain bike, I'm running 2.4. I have a mixed tire setup, which I'm going to get a lot of hate for, but it was just what I had at the time. I was running, like, for point to point, I think I did 19 and 20. Something like that. Yeah. I like to keep the rear tire over 20 because if I go below 20, for me at like 165 pounds, I will smack a rim. And that's bad news.
Are you running liners on your mountain bike?
I did put them in at the end of the year after point to point because I broke two rims in like the space of 2 weeks or something like that. Mm-hmm. And one of them was extremely compromised. Like the one that I raced at point to point was extremely compromised. It had like a fold in the carbon on the edge.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. But, I mean, I rode it at that point. From the time that I noticed it to the time that I finished point-to-point, I probably put 500 miles on that wheel on, like, proper mountain bike trails, rugged stuff up in Park City, right, prepping for that race. And I didn't have a problem with it. But one day I was just out night riding, of all things, up in Corner Canyon on the fire road, and I come down on a rock just at the wrong time, at the wrong angle, and I'm out of air. So I put a new, like a loaner wheel from our old, one of our old bikes on there, another carbon, and it was terrible, but it, and it broke like within the week. So it just, cause I was rolling down a set of stairs and I slammed on the rear wheel. I don't know if you could tell, I don't have a lot of finesse, but
I was going to say, cause I'm a pretty big guy.
Right.
I run my pressure really, really
yeah,
really
I know. I that's
I
that's
never,
something that's definitely
smack rims,
that's but. Something that definitely needs to be in the works. But you know, us younger guys,
you don't ride with the exuberance of these
I
young
don't,
men.
No,
fair
I don't,
enough.
I was
yeah,
gonna say, but
I'm running, and I will say for what it's worth, people listening, I don't know if I've mentioned this on the podcast, I am running liners right now. I'm actually running double liners.
Double. What is
through
that
the winter? Where I've got I've got like front and rear, not just the rear.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
I don't think I'll do that for the race season, but I've got front and rear liners right now. And when I was just in St. George, it was. I know that game changer is such a cliche, and I should say too, I'm 175, so like I think I'm heavier than the average kid
what
listening
are
to this. Like 17, 18. And wow. There's no concern over, and I'm running We Are One hoops. Like they're pretty burly, you know, like they're not ridiculously light.
Right.
I run 18, 19.
Good for you. I ride hard. So,
yeah, currently I'm running the double liners too. I haven't had a ton of time to ride them, but
yeah.
You know,
I think for like a lot, maybe some racing, I'd take out the front. The front's probably overkill
for sure.
But I mean like off season riding where my mountain bike's only really getting ridden in St. George until March.
It's rugged. You want to keep that bike protected.
Yeah.
Go for it.
So I would say liners. For those of you who are like liner curious, I'm running the Vittorias too, and they were super easy.
I'm using
liners,
the,
I'm gonna get the Vittorias.
They're
what are,
so good.
What are the ones that they're using in the World Cup? The blue ones.
The Tuba Lights?
The Tuba Lights.
Yeah.
I have the Tuba Lights
as well, yeah.
The Vittoria just, they like disintegrate every time I change my tires.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Vittorias are really
good. I want to get the Vittorias.
I love
this.
So I should say, I've got greedy on the tech stuff, and we went over for that. I do want to transition us to it. What do we call it?
When we were like talking before we started recording, you were just mentioning something about just some aches and pains.
Yes.
That you're experiencing, even though you're a young lad. That
and this is more important than our next part anyway, so we should throw this out. Because that was an interesting point. You were like, you mentioned I've got like two or three kind of chronic injury-ish things.
Yeah,
that are...
I think injury is a strong word, but they're just inconveniences almost, you know? Like, it's one of those things where you notice it every once in a while, and you're like, dang, why isn't that going away? Like, is there something wrong with me?
So I'm dealing with some things, too, so maybe they're the same. Well, I don't even know what they are. We haven't talked, we didn't get into details.
Right.
But...
Let's exchange traumas here. Yeah. What do you got?
So I had a crash when I was prepping for cross-state stuff. I was up mountain biking, like, in... like some solid rain in Corner Canyon, and the trails really weren't too bad because you know those trails, they could just kind of soak it up for a little bit and then they start to form puddles and then they get really slick.
Mm-hmm.
I was going down Ghost Falls, and just above the falls there's like a tight turn coming into the falls themselves, and I just went straight into this puddle and I tucked it instantly and went straight onto my knee. And so my kneecap is actually like a different shape from on my right side than it is for my left side because of the bruising. And I don't think it's has gone down.
Did you
but
get it x-rayed?
I probably should get it x-rayed. Probably should. It doesn't hurt super bad, but like if I hit my knee on a wall or something like that, that hurts like a ton. So maybe that's something. I also had a ski crash like 2 weeks ago just on the groomers. And yeah, I'm not an excellent skier, but I was just trying to have some fun, get a couple party laps in, and I fell over. And I didn't even hit my thumb or anything, but now my right thumb is like, if you look, it's like twice the size of my left thumb. It's not that dramatic, but let's see.
Bang, dude. It's a little quick bit. Reminder to all of our skiers. Keep it
Don't
safe.
Hurt yourself.
Don't hurt you. Have as much fun it. As you can have without hurting
skier
yourself.
Skier thumb where you kind of hyperextend your thumb when you crash.
Maybe. It. I've never
I
heard of that
you
before.
Crash with the pull strap on. It
yeah. That might have been
I've
it.
Had that
yeah. Before. But that's been bothersome, and I'm probably going to go see a doctor about that too because it's
we're very pro doctor here. Definitely go do that.
But I will say something that you absolutely cannot skip is strength training and stretching because those preventative exercise workouts that you're going to do are going to be instrumental to keeping you healthy and strong throughout the season, and it's just going to elevate your performance a ton.
Yeah, because
that
got,
falls into the consistency as well. You know, just taking care of yourself.
Like winter and all your injuries are pretty
minor.
They're not very mysterious. They sound like young guy injuries.
I was doing cool stuff and I hit myself.
When you're in your 40s, you get to look forward to like piriformis syndrome.
You're like getting off the toilet and you tweak your ankle, like cool stuff. No, but like I'm older than you, Riker, but I'm 25 and I already have what I would describe as a bum knee that is just
consistently... And I heard about you telling this story on the podcast at one point, and I was like, you know, that's never going to happen to me.
It'll happen to a lot of people.
And just, look at me. Yeah. Now I have a knee that's bothering me.
And you know, and like with knees, it's not your knee that's the problem. It's something either up or down the line.
Yeah.
And it can be really, really like, it's not like a WebMD thing to figure out what's wrong with it.
Yeah.
It can take a little sleuthing from a professional to really find the root cause of that, you know, but the winter is a great time to, you know, to see a sports med doctor or to go get some PT done.
Does that doctor in Park City you guys always recommend?
A Max Testa.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Does he do stuff like this?
Sure.
Probably. Yeah. He does pretty much anything that would touch cycling.
And I've heard that this guy is like no joke. Like he seriously, I heard about a story with Truman where Truman was going to race Nike States and he had like a swollen spleen. And Max Testa told him not to race, and he only didn't race at Nike State Championships in his senior year because he had Max Testa telling him and not some random general doctor. So I've heard that this guy's no joke.
No, I think of excuses to go see Max Testa because
he's like, one of those people.
He is the most interesting person to listen to. It's so much fun. But you know, just a reminder to use the winter training season to see your sports med doctor, do some physical therapy, work on your stretching, work on your mobility, work on your yoga, work on your Pilates, all that good stuff for your body. Cause your knee, I mean, if your knee is hurting, it's probably something wrong with your hips or something, you know? And,
right. It's so weird how the body's all interconnected like that. For example, I had I've been dealing with, some pain in my arches of my feet, especially on the left side. And forever I thought that it was...
My gift will be a good... Okay, keep going.
Okay. I just thought that it was like coming down to maybe me walking a lot more because I started at the U shortly before it was an issue. And I reached out to Kyson and then to Art at Kyson's recommendation. And Art told me... This is Art O'Connor from last episode, right? He told me that it was probably because of my shoes. And so I switched from like a proper trail running shoe into Vans. And he told me that that would help because being on a spongy shoe sometimes can make your ankles all weird. Hmm. But it turns out that that had absolutely nothing to do with it. And it actually got worse. Because I didn't have as much of a toe box in these, and these weren't broken in very well. So they were worse for walking. But what ended up being the root cause was tight calves. And I didn't realize that that was an issue, but I went and saw my general doctor, and they told me that that was probably the issue. And so I started stretching my calves, and just like that, it's gone.
Yeah.
So stretch, kids.
I wonder if GPs like freak out when they see someone with shaved legs walk in because they're about to just have to deal with the craziest like person who's like, I am obsessed with this. Like,
it's super interesting.
Should we quickly jump into our shallow dive?
We should say our rapid fire shallow dive because it is the season. For those of you, I was telling my kids today, for those of you who haven't turned in your book reports yet, term ends at the end of the week. And in the same way, I'm going to tell you guys, for those of you who haven't started Christmas shopping yet, it's right around the corner. I am fortunate enough to be married to someone who is proactive about Christmas shopping. So I've got mine done. But for those of you who need a hand and who have cyclists in your life, which is probably most of you listening to this, we did want to run over some of the nuances of gift getting for cyclists and maybe give you some places to start. I will say that this is a challenge for a lot of you because cyclists are particular. Even if you don't think that you are, you know, like Tessa always complains that she's like, it's like what you really want is bike stuff, but you have such specific tastes in bike stuff. And a lot of it's kind of in this opaque, hazy, foggy world of, you know, techie garbage that you and I so and Isaac Boyd and Xander love to swim around in.
Should I go first?
I want to start off with you, Dan. What would you point people in the direction of?
Okay, so I've got a little list here. And we're going to have to be kind of quick on these because we're already almost at an hour. So we're going to have to... So a few gift ideas. I mean, we've mentioned the Bolt Razor before. I just want to throw that out again.
Yep.
That actually would be kind of a fun little stocking stuffer gift.
Great.
That's very expensive for a stocking stuffer. I'm just going to say that, though.
Well...
Because isn't that razor like 60, something like that?
It's a great local product from a local company.
That's true.
So I definitely local. Check it out.
It is cool, you know, and we're spending like, how much is a Axis transmission derailleur?
Oh, thousands. Yeah, 1,200 maybe.
Yeah.
So
worth its weight in gold, literally.
Like. So here's some I thought of. The first one I want to throw out there is chamois cream. Because most of my gifts are, these are less expensive gifts.
Yeah.
So chamois cream, for those that haven't used it yet, it's like something you don't need, but it just makes your life so much better. And I specifically like kind of like the spicy kind that like I use the ASOS.
I was going to say, I know it's obnoxious to recommend ASOS products all the time, and I try to do it less. Genuinely, the also chamois cream is the stuff.
It's really go with good. It, Joe. It changes lives,
good.
Man.
It's very good.
Like, it just makes... Because I heard like Colby Pierce once say, you know, if you need chamois cream, you're doing things wrong.
And I can kind of co-sign that.
I agree. But it really is. It's just something that just makes riding more pleasant.
Yeah. So. If you're not totally optimized in your saddle and chamois game and you're on that quest, having some chamois cream, I think especially, I'll throw it in for like longer rides too. Yeah. I threw some on before point to point. And you know what?
Is it specifically a chafing blocker? What is like the main purpose of chamois cream? As someone who's never used it.
I think primarily, yeah.
It just lubricates, like just prevents chafing, prevents saddle sores.
Which some people are more prone to than others. I've never had a problem with it. Some people have more of a problem.
Yeah. And that's not why... if you're actually getting saddle sores, you've got bigger problems.
Right.
But it's just more comfortable.
Doesn't hurt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, you just use it on your sit bones. That's where I use it, you know.
Okay.
And yeah. I don't need it or use it a ton, but it is nice to have.
I use it. I just like it.
So, you know, it's a preference thing. Some people go through a tub of it a week. So some people never use it.
That was my first one. My next one is the G8 insoles.
Mm.
Have you heard of these? They're really cool.
Sounds like a sponsored thing. The G8 insoles. Have you heard of these guys? Using code DanIsBoring10.
I think they're from like Australia or something.
Okay.
They're kind of hard to buy. You're just going to have to Google them.
$20 says they're from Austria, but carry on.
But anyhow, they're kind of cool. They're like insoles that have like a bunch of little holes in the bottom and a bunch of little parts that you can put these different things in different places so you can kind of customize insoles to your own feet. So
you can call me a nerd. So what are you not calling me a nerd when you've got like customizable insoles? That's crazy.
You know,
are these bike specific insoles? Or are they just general shoes?
I think they're sport specific, but like a lot of bike fitters, like when you go into like a lot of people say, like the most important part of a bike fit is
get someone a bike fit for Christmas. Look at that. Would be crazy.
You know, is getting like orthotics. And this is like, it's cheaper and probably easier than orthotics. So, You know, if you've got like, if you're having foot pain or hot spots in your feet.
G8 insoles.
G8 insoles. So
how much is a set of those?
They're not cheap. They're like $80.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, so.
All right. But again, in the grand scheme of things, if $80 makes your feet stop hurting, that's $80 well spent, yeah. Right? Fair enough.
Yeah. So my next one is ice spikes.
That would be a good one. Solid crampons. Yeah.
Just for like winter hiking and stuff. If you don't have a pair, like I'm just such a big winter hike fan.
Yeah.
If you don't have a pair of ice spikes, they have some like black diamond ones at Sierra.
Oh, really? For how much?
Like $60. Okay. But they're really nice. I bought some on Amazon for $20. I don't know how good they are. How good were they? Did you use them?
They seemed similar.
Yeah, were they the ones that you just stretch over your foot?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, stretch over. I love them. It's a nice thing to have in the arsenal. And maybe throw like a nice hiking, like we try, like, I don't know if you have them, like tell us. Oh, no. Okay. No, don't. Sorry.
I'm getting there.
Okay.
I actually had on my list, and we kind of mentioned this earlier, was trekking poles.
Okay.
Because I honestly think if you're doing exercise outside, get poles so it becomes a whole body workout. You know, you're using your upper body. A higher percentage of your body's in zone two, then I think it would be more efficient. So get some trekking poles, some telescopic trekking poles. That'd be a cool gift.
There you go.
Another one I had, and we talked about.
Like, I think Dan's going to compose the whole list here.
My list is good, and we happened to talk about like half of my a wax chain was one of them.
Yep. Contender pre-waxes chains.
Yeah, pre-wax chain. For those that don't want to get a crock pot and deal with all the chemicals and where to dump the turpentine when you're done and all that stuff.
Your neighbor's flower bed is the answer to that.
Yeah, buy a wax chain. That'd be a cool stocking stuffer.
I should clarify, I don't work for Contender anymore. It's just the only bike shop I'm intimately familiar with. Maybe other shops do it too. I know that when I worked at Contender, they sold them. So,
I think that is a pretty a niche thing because I know that Hangar 15 and Go Ride don't offer that.
Yeah.
They're the two other biggest.
And my last one, this one I actually thought of while we were talking, would be inserts.
Yeah.
Tire inserts, that is a good one.
That'd be a really good one.
I will say that's an expensive one, but in the cross-country scene, even getting just a rear one is a big step.
The Vittorias are the way to go. Yeah. And as you said, with all this stuff, it's a good idea to at least have someone at a local bike shop help you. Like with the chain, you'll need to get the right chain. There's a lot of, we probably have 5 different chain types that are variously compatible represented on Maybird right now. So
yeah, I think tire inserts is one of those ones that you can kind of like, as long as you're getting a 29 for
a
mountain bike,
more universal.
It's a little more universal. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So those are actually pretty good. I would love, I can say I would love to receive any of those. Like I can coast. That's a good list.
Yeah. Okay. My time.
Okay. Your time to shine.
All right.
Did I take any of yours?
I have a very slim list, so I'm not sure. Maybe the tire inserts could have been one of mine. Okay. But on the same page there, if someone that you know in your life has very bald tires, that could be a good gift, getting them a new set of mountain bike tires.
What's easy to do, you can just look at the ones that they have, write it down.
And buy a brand new pair of those.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's actually a pretty good one.
I need some new ones. So
hey, if Santa Claus is listening, I think most tires that people run on the team probably vary from $60 to $90, depending on your tastes. So depending on what you want to spend, I actually think that'd be a good one. So just sneak out to the garage, see what tires they've got, and replace those.
Yeah, that's a great gift idea. I think also another one is just replacing their favorite bottle of chain lube, getting them a new bottle of chain lube, or one better, getting them the Silka Super Secret Drip lube wax stuff. It's at Contender. It's online at Silka.
If they have a chain that they bought that was never like professionally stripped and waxed, can you use that?
Those have a lot of oil on them already. So right. that doesn't mix with oil.
Once you switch to wax lube, it will stay wax lubed forever and it will perform twice as good as
So that product is good for someone that has a wax chain.
Yeah, that's for someone who's already waxed their chain. I should tell you too, really quick on the waxing chains, I use the new silica chip that you put in where you take a fresh chain. And you don't have to strip it.
Is this the speed chip?
It's the speed chip where it's not two separate processes anymore. By some witchcraft and black magic that I don't understand, there's this extra chip that you can add that takes your factory grease chain and turns that grease into wax. So I will say,
that's
really quick,
product.
Just on all, we've mentioned waxing several times. It's not as bad as you think. it really isn't. Like, it's not as bad as you think. So I would say, yeah, that would be...
That's a big low-hanging fruit. Sure. If you're thinking about getting oversized pulleys and aero socks, throw that in there right
that's
now.
So 100%. Much faster. Yeah, so much faster than that. So beyond, so we did the tires, the Silka drip lube. The Silka drip lube, which I use, by the way. It's excellent.
Yeah, I think aero socks isn't a bad one for a varsity JVA rider. That's a reasonable gift
again,
to receive.
If nothing else, they look cool.
Yeah.
The intimidation factor.
Nice white socks never hurt anybody, right?
Yeah. So, if you're wearing those, you have to have shaved legs, by the way. Have
for to. Sure. 100%. If you're I not shaving your legs you. At that point. Down.
Yeah.
Nice one.
I was going to say, who would be wearing aero socks that doesn't shave their legs?
Probably Andrew is my answer to that. I think immediately my brain goes to Andrew or Jacob. They seem like
that,
the correct
they would be the
question.
Two. Yep, for sure. I
they
see
both
that.
Shave their legs. Yeah. Well,
Jacob does hamster shorts. I'm going to overshare because he hasn't listened to this. What's he going to do? Drive over here from the hospital.
Is it bad that I sometimes do that as
yes.
well?
Yes. I'm very disappointed.
Okay, well, I'm just going to say day. It was like finals week for my project for mechanical engineering, and it was the day before cross state, and I wanted to get to bed.
May God have mercy on your soul. What are your other picks?
It's kind of a hard one, but I think overshoes, if you want to go one better than the aero socks, or if you have someone that wants to ride outside in the winter a lot and they don't have overshoes, that's a big change. I also need to get some of those.
Velo toes are nice. Like, if you want to do crits, they're nice, but I think even more functionally, they're just like extremely warm. It's like it's a rubber overshoe.
It's like so, a neoprene.
It does not let anything through.
And like, it won't be great for Nike racing, but it'll be excellent for like your winter rides.
Keeping your feet completely dry.
Yeah.
Like that would be excellent.
That's a move.
And I say too, like just little like toe caps or toe covers that like, not even like the fancy, like full ones. Those are pretty cheap. A lot of brands make those. Those are great to have in your arsenal and they're really pretty affordable. Like even like the fancy Asos ones that I was given were like $20 and I've had them for 7 years.
Yeah. I think another big one for our younger riders, if they're just kind of getting into this thing, would be a heart rate monitor. That would be a big one, and a bike computer. That's a little bit more expensive. That's for the parents, but that's definitely something that will elevate your training. And if
that's
not those,
that's a good suggestion.
Then a power meter, like if you already have
or
those
power meter pedals.
Yeah, I think the power meter pedals are a little more expensive, though, right? But that's a huge, huge benefit, and that'll change your training completely. Or maybe a month of coaching. That would be pretty interesting to see if you could, how you felt about it. Just trying it out for 1 month. Highly recommend Kaizen. There are other options available. I know Dan also provides some training plans to the more attuned to their training, right? So it's really not like a black or white situation here. There's a lot of gifts. So any for you, Joe?
So I have several, and I'm realizing that one of my things, I've got this Garmin watch that I love that's actually pretty affordable. And
which
then
watch
I,
it, is it?
Well, it occurred to me, I didn't remember which number it was, because Garmin makes about a billion different watches. While I'm looking up the price on this, I will tell you that I have a few that are pretty universal that I actually really like. The first one that I've loved this year is the 1UP EDC multi-tool that goes into your steer tube. It used to be that you had to like drill out your steer tube and it was a pain. You had to take it to the shop. They sell a little kit now where you basically just tap your star nut down a little bit farther and it replaces your top cap. And that has actually been so nice to just
have.
How
much do those cost now?
It was like $50. They gave me one. They're pretty cheap and they'll work on, I mean, unless you have one of the older Cannondales with the huge steer tube, that'd work just fine.
Yeah, I don't think you can go wrong with a good multi-tool.
Yeah,
that's an excellent gift.
I also want to throw out, and I can't figure out what number it is. I have like the cheapest Garmin watch, and it has been, no exaggeration, one of the best purchases I've ever made.
And you're coming from a Whoop, right?
It came from a Whoop. So I was doing Whoop, which was a really cool product, but it was like $30 a month and
really expensive.
Didn't tell time. Like, and I love a lot of things about the Whoop, but I switched to this Garmin, and I tried an Apple Watch briefly because Tessa had an extra one. And I hated it. I did not like the Apple Watch. The battery lasted for 20 minutes. It wouldn't talk to my Garmin. This Garmin watch.
Which Apple Watch was this?
I don't even know. It was like a not the oldest one, but not a super new one. Right. I don't know. Right. Maybe the new ones are better. But this Garmin, and I bought it on Amazon. It was on sale like a year ago for like $150. And it's like super simple. The battery lasts for like 2 weeks. It is my heart rate monitor now. Garmin's app is not as pretty as Whoop's, but it does all the same stuff. That one is, it's like for the, and you just kind of have your like heart rate and your calories being tracked every day. And like, Know what your resting heart rate is throughout the season. Like, if you don't have some kind of fitness watch tracker, the most basic Garmin is great. I love it.
Garmin's like, I did, because I use a Whoop.
Yeah.
Love the Whoop.
Yeah.
It's the best heart rate monitor I've ever used. I've had such fewer erroneous heart rate readings with my Whoop than I ever did with a chest strap.
And I'll say
that. What chest strap do you use?
I've had the Garmin and I've had the Wahoo.
And you think they're both?
They're fine, but I just, it's like every once in a while I get some, it just wouldn't be working well, or I'm getting some kind of bogus.
So do you usually read the
I always use the heart rate for my Whoop.
Interesting.
And it's like, I almost never question it. It's really, really
so some good. Some kind of fitness tracker. I personally love just this cheapest Garmin watch. I'd also
Garmin
throw
watches
out,
get pretty expensive though.
Oh, you can spend a ton. It's whatever the cheapest.
I think they
one
have
is.
Like a $1,200 watch.
You can spend
like
way. Yeah, some people have way too much money to light on fire. But other things I'd throw out. I would say, like, as a general rule, if it's a serious cyclist, be like careful buying clothing. A lot of people have really and with
very
like any gear
taste.
Too have very particular taste. But some universal things are like a nice multi-tool, or if you want to spend a little bit more, like a nice digital pump. If you don't have a digital pump is great, especially for mountain bike tires where we're on the lower end of the spectrum and we need, like, for a lot of roadies, they go with, like, oh, as long as it's 85 to 90. With mountain bikes, it's, like, 19 to 20 is a huge difference, right?
A half-pound pressure in a mountain bike tire is huge.
So, like, a digital pump, I'd throw out, I'd say a shock, if you don't have a shock pump, that's another thing you should just have.
You
a
need
torque
that,
wrench.
For sure.
A torque wrench, if you have any carbon fiber parts on your bike,
just the
is
little
really
ones
something.
For park tool, right?
Again.
Oh, a chain checker.
Chain checker's like, if that shouldn't even be a Christmas present. They're like, you can buy the Chinese ones for $6 on Amazon. Like, just, you should have a bunch of those just sitting around. Multi-tools in general, I think, are nice. That's like a pretty fun thing to give people. Another thing I'd throw out, one of my all-time favorite pieces of cycling gear, as I roll up to reveal that I'm not actually wearing them, are the Swiftwick socks. The Swiftwick Performance and Aspire 7 socks. 7 is the right length, by the way. No more, no less.
So those occasions when you're not wearing Maybird socks? Right?
So I got married in mine.
Seriously.
Like, I like them because it is the only sock I wear off the bike too. It's just my go-to sock for everything. Obviously wear your Maybird socks as much as you can. But
yeah, they feel great. There's no complaints there.
To have some other socks
amazing.
In the round, in like the line, and just plain black too is super nice.
All right, everyone, so get socks for Christmas.
They are very expensive. Yeah. I'd say they're on the expensive side of socks.
But they're very,
though, right?
They're very durable. They're very, very durable.
And they also have lifetime guarantee. So if you rip a pair of them, then you can have them sent right back.
Which is pretty cool. Yeah. I'd throw those out. I'd say another thing that is relatively easy to shop for in like the wearables would be a helmet. Like if you're a parent and your kids had the same helmet for 2 or 3 years.
Or if
you've crashed on it at all, you should replace it.
100%.
Helmets come in small, medium, large usually. And there's some brands fit slightly differently than others. But like, helmets are relatively easy to buy. Where even like buying a jersey can be kind of tricky. Like, a lot of people vary between sizes and brands and prefer a different fit. Helmets are relatively safe thing to buy for someone else. Shoes, on the other hand, aren't. You need to have the person there trying
you
on a few different
fit,
pairs of shoes.
Sure.
Helmets are a little easier.
You know, I just thought of something too. When we rode with Hannah Finn Champ, she just kept pulling jackets out of her jersey. Like,
yeah.
How many was it though?
I don't know. Like, she just
it's
like
a Mary Poppins situation.
Yeah, like she just kept pulling out these as it got colder and colder. She kept pulling out more and more.
So we're talking like 3+, right?
Probably 3 or 4. I don't know.
Like I would say packable jackets and vests are so
that's a huge
nice.
Deal. Yeah, the ones that they offer on Hyperthreads are great. I used the
Hyperthreads are great.
The removable sleeve one for a while this year. Mm-hmm. That was great. Also, one of my favorites right now is the Patagonia Houdini, which is a super lightweight, packable. It's essentially just it's not really a rain jacket because it gets wet and it saturates almost instantly, but it's a windbreaker and it looks good. I think it was $80. I found mine at Level 9. They have them at REI all over the place.
Yeah. Yeah. So just
it's
a
not
bunch
an expensive
of light,
jacket.
Packable jackets.
Yeah.
You know,
would be great. And I'd throw out too. And if you're, especially if you're getting into the longer rides, I've started using bar bags and top tube bags a lot more. Like, point to point this year, I had a top tube bag and a bar bag just to keep like food. You know, I know. Well, I was going less. I spent more time out on course than you did. I ate way more probably. Like, for longer rides, and especially if you're coaching, to keep extra tubes, extra food and
for
stuff.
Sure.
Like, I don't like saddlebags personally.
They bounce all over the place.
They bounce there. And I also, I've got a Fox post that won't go up with a saddlebag on it, which is hilarious. Yeah. I don't love that post.
Funny story, actually, I lost my saddlebag at Point to Point in Round Valley.
That's hilarious.
I'm being dead serious.
That's awesome.
So I was in Round Valley and I hear something and I'm like, oh my goodness, my bike is about to fail because it's just like, every time I go through a corner, it sounds like I'm G-ing out the shock or something. The shock's just exploded, right? Yep. But I look down and it's because I have one of those Bontrager saddlebags that are held on by two pieces of Velcro and a little piece of rubber.
Those never work.
Those suck. Yeah, those don't buy a Bontrager saddlebag, end of the day.
Any cheap saddlebag sucks.
You gotta, that's one of the things, there's like a bare minimum quality spec you need. Yeah. For sure.
So I'd say like top two bags and bar bags. Again, depending on the bike, some will work better than others. I segued into yours. You segued into mine. Then in just a couple, because I know we're out of time and you said to short list, but here we go. You're like, you didn't prepare. Watch me. The Uswe, it's a Swedish brand, USWE. Their packs are like,
unbelievable.
No disrespect to the good folks at Camelback, but they've got some catching up to do. Like Uswe took like bike packs and kicked them forward like 30 years into the future. Yeah. They're very good. They almost have like a parachute style chest strap that is more comfortable. Four-point harness that's way more comfortable and way more secure than the Camelback.
It doesn't bounce around at all.
You don't have like
completely professional.
Your bag's not on the top of your head on the, you know, when you're going down Zen or whatever.
It keeps your pockets open too, which is a huge important thing.
I mean, a little more expensive than some of the other things we've talked about, but that. And then just a couple more small things that are safe to get for just about anybody. ESI grips are great, fun colors, easy, universal compatibility.
Go out to the bike, see what color grips they have, match that.
If you don't, I think most people run ESI grips these days. If they're not already doing that, that's a great one. I would say water bottles if you need a really easy, cheap one. Everybody needs more water bottles. Obviously, buy the Maybrick bottles, but like, you know,
you show up to a race, you can take a Maybrick bottle.
Yeah,
like water bottles are easy. And then I was also going to throw out like side loader water bottle cages for those of you who are riding
which
full suspension bike.
Which are the specialized ones, right?
I mean, lots of brands make side loader ones. Like
specialized Z cages are just excellent. And they also
make sure you get a right and a left if you have two. Right.
And I should explain really quick that a lot of full suspension bikes, it's difficult to like lift your bottle straight out. So these are bottle cages that open to the side. So you kind of peel your bottle out to the side. Which for people with a full suspension bike can be, you know, I mean, it's a game changer, but very helpful. With all those in mind, if you can't, you know what? As I'm looking over a trainer, new pedals too. If your rider, and for the parents, if your rider is riding like the crappy old SPDs that have like 6.5 pounds of extra metal and a ring around them, like they've got the extra cage, I'd ditch those. XT pedals are what, like $80?
Less.
No, they're like, what are they? No, are they 100? I don't know. I'm a bad
bike
shopper.
The XTRs are 130 maybe.
Something like that.
And that's the maximum.
Get XT or XTR, XC pedals. Like there might be a significant weight saving on offer there too.
And if your kid is on flat pedals, 100%, get that switch happening this season.
Yeah, stop feeding him until they get on clipless, right, Dan? Just kidding. No.
If they can ride a bike, it's time.
Take a more nuanced approach to that. But yeah, basically. So I'd throw all those. And I'd say maybe really quick to finish here, the things to avoid, shoes are risky. Clothing can be risky. Like spending a ton of money on a new tire they've never ridden before. Like again, like anything where they might have a personal taste, I would, and then anything like getting them a dropper post might be really technically fraught unless you have somebody who can help you with it. The things that we gave are pretty easy, universal that anyone's going to like.
Cafe Rio gift certificates.
Yeah.
That's excellent.
There you go. Finish off with that. So, for the cyclist in your life, you know, and then maybe just some therapy. Could we turn this into like a BetterHelp ad? Actually, they're the worst. Don't use them. all of my friends who are studying therapy and stuff are like, yeah, they're not the best. Well, I don't even know how we got here, but,
well done, Joe.
You know what? I'm falling off the ladder this week. Who cares?
Falling dramatically at a great rate.
There we go. But any questions for next week? Be sure to send them our way. Riker, thank you so much
for
your time.
Yeah, this has been fun.
This has been really good.
I'm super thrilled to be here. I have a little competition running with Miles in all aspects of life, and he's currently at 2 appearances on the podcast.
So we'll get you back.
Sweet.
Yeah, we'll bar Miles until you've caught up. Don't worry. Miles can't come back until you've had another round. So,
beautiful.
Thank you for your time there. Everybody ride safe. Come to the Zwift on Wednesday. Send us your questions
Running group
next
Monday
week.
Next week.
Running group Monday. Lots of Maybird love, and we will talk to you guys soon.
Goodbye.